Hi there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 coming to you from the Gaelic Athletic Association's Croke Park. Traditionally, when we think about IoT, we think about cool little robots and do-it-yourself kind of things, but we're here to learn today how IoT can actually transform the lives of people in cities and especially in this stadium. They use this as a test bed to learn about how IoT can help them learn about what's going on in the stadium, and also we'll learn about how you too can use IoT to transform the way we do things. I'm here with Suzanne Little, technology lead here at DCU. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm very well.
So tell me a little bit about a smart city. How do you envision what a smart city would be, and what are some of the data implications that you find?
Well, smart cities are fascinating for me because they produce so much data. And I always want data. So a lot of my research is around analyzing the content of images and video. Mm-hmm. And of course, in a true smart city where you have sensors and they're gathering information all the time, images and video and audio are really important parts of that. So that gives me, as a researcher, the opportunity to solve really interesting and exciting problems. So how do people move around a city? What sort of sounds happen? How does traffic behave in different environments? So smart cities for me are interesting problems, but also good sources of data.
So generally, I mean, there's a couple of problems that may or may not happen with this. And one of them that I hadn't considered are, first, the legal implications, and then the technical limitations that are imposed by these legal implications. Why don't you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so one of the unusual problems you come across when you do this sort of work is challenges around data privacy and data protection. So there are legal regulations, they're different in every country, every region, around how long you can store information about people and what you can capture. And this is a serious problem, and there are different ways that we as researchers and developers can approach this. So one of the really new and unique ideas that we have as part of the Smart Stadium project is to look at where we process information. So the concept of edge computing or fog computing within a cloud infrastructure means that we can potentially process CCTV video, for example, closer to the point at which it's captured, hopefully still within the network and the infrastructure of the controller company. So that has a legal implication. By doing that, we can apply our models, our machine learning processes to get tracking information, for example, that's not personally identifying, it's general metadata, and that can then be pushed up to a cloud infrastructure and combined with other data sources to identify unusual patterns of behavior. You know, is this event running smoothly, or is there a pinch point happening? We don't need to see faces to do that. We'd prefer not to have the legal responsibility for that data, so we can do it closer to point of capture.
So I'm thinking of this from a machine learning perspective, because generally when I was trained in machine learning, it was you save all your data and you work on that and then you munge it, but you have to keep all your data. You're telling me now that you can't legally, but then you want to do models that live somewhere on premise and somewhere in the cloud. How are these models, I'm trying to understand how these models are reconciled,
yeah,
and how one would go about this in practice.
Yeah, I mean, this is interesting because what you're describing is really the traditional way that machine learning researchers in labs like mine work. Right? You get a problem, you get a data set, it's got some labels, you train a model, everybody's happy, it works well. The real world doesn't work like that.
Right.
So how do we move from our lab-based research to stuff that is deployable, that is practical? So the Smart Stadium project was partly motivated by that. It gives us this test bed that's small enough to try these things, but large enough to prove them. Now in practice, what that means is we might start with a seed or a sample of data that we work with in a traditional way, and that builds a model. And that model then can be deployed to be tested in that testbed environment. And then as we go on, we're getting the data streams for the non-personalized data, and we can look at then updating the local models based on the information we have. So the new movements in machine learning are really around things like active learning or lifelong learning, where you don't train a model once on a big chunk of data, mm-hmm, and then have it live forevermore. You're dealing with big data, you're dealing with streaming data, and you're dealing with the concept of being able to update those models.
So how do I know, for example, what metadata to keep to send to the larger model versus what needs to be kept there at the smaller? Because I'm imagining like a small model versus a large model, or are they the same model? Help me understand that a little bit.
So I guess the small versus large is probably a good way to start thinking about it, because generally at the point of capture, your computational power is low.
Right.
So you're looking at things like feature extraction, tracklet detection, that kind of quite low level stuff. And then those numbers, those features can be sent up for a larger model that might be pulling information from multiple sources to do something more on the level of scene or event or activity classification across a range of different locations.
Let's get into the actual, because right now I feel like we're talking really high level. Let's talk about what we're trying to do, what you're trying to do at Croke Park. Why don't you tell us about the Smart Stadium project and then how sort of that projects into the Smart City project.
Sure. So the Smart Stadium project is a rich project. There's so many different applications and proofs I can talk about. But one of the really interesting ones we did recently with the help of Microsoft and Intel was to look at how loud is the 16th player. So sometimes they call it the victory cheer, or how loud is the crowd getting. So in that, we have a number of sensors installed in the stadium. So some of those are microphones that measure decibel levels. Some of those are cameras that will record video images. There are water monitors, rainfall gauges, weather stations, some things like that. Those are linked up to Intel Gateway devices that are locally on the Croke Park network. Mm-hmm. And they accumulate data and then send it up as packets to the Azure platform for further processing. Mm-hmm. So in the How Loud is the 16th Player application, the microphones were recording a range of averages every minute. Those packets were being sent to the gateway, which was reformatting them, performing the appropriate security, sending them up to Azure. We were then applying various models, and that was being produced as a Power BI dashboard. We were able to use that during the football finals and semifinals to look at which team was getting the most support at various times during the match.
I love the idea of having this smart stadium as the stepping stone to a smart city. Why don't you talk a little bit about some of the things that you learn in this real environment?
There's all sorts of things that you don't consider. Where is the electricity? How far is it to the nearest internet cable? So there are some really practical installation stuff. You know, when can you book the electrician? These sorts of physical deployment issues that we tend to not consider because we're just dealing with data, mm-hmm. They become something that have to be addressed. One of the interesting things about putting stuff into a real stadium is that it's full of concrete and metal and warm bodies who have multiple mobile phones. And so we had to consider things about connectivity as a team that we hadn't had to think about before. And then for us as researchers, the data is real. So there's occasional packet loss. So we have to interpolate information between data sources.
Yeah.
Right? It's not clean and pretty like you might get when you download an academic data set to play with. And so learning how to overcome things like gaps in data, and learning how in particular to integrate information. So we would generally get a single piece of data and it wouldn't be from multiple places. But in the stadium, we have two microphones on opposite sides of the stadium. They are 60 meters apart. I can't remember exactly what that is in feet or yards. But there's a distance between those. Correlating different things happening in the match, when you've got these two microphones observing the same event, this is really a very, very simple correlation example. So you can imagine extrapolating this out to a smart city where suddenly you've got things in different locations around a block, and maybe you're tracking something that's happening as it moves along a cityscape. That scaling out of stuff where suddenly you have to take into account physical location, where you're looking at delays in events moving from place to place. We wouldn't normally have the opportunity to try these things out. Smart Stadium lets us solve some of those problems, and then we look at how this moves out into a cityscape.
It's an interesting way to start to look at the real implications of putting these things out. Let's talk a little bit more about the CCTV example that you were talking about, mm-hmm. and what that would look like, for example, in Croke Park.
Yeah, so in Croke Park, we've taken a number of steps to look at how video works. So they've very kindly given us samplings from their CCTV, and we've had people working on how we can detect things like the crowd density and how it changes. So how full is an area? And you might think, well, what use is that?
Yeah.
But interestingly, when we did this across a number of cameras, so we had four or five cameras around a concession area, and we looked at, you know, clearly you get a nice big peak of people before the game starts, and it drops off really fast, everyone rushes into their seats. Half time, everyone comes out again to get their food and drink. And then there's sort of a bit of a plateau as they go back in, and we thought nothing of it, but the Croke Park management were actually really interested to see that, because they had never had it quantified that there was this kind of stepping back when people returned for the second half of a match. And they wanted to know, well, why is that? Do we need more staff on the registers? You know, is it that people are not getting served fast enough, so they're still finishing off their food? Because in Croke Park, you can't take your food back to your seat.
Oh.
Well, you can't take alcohol back to your seat anyway. Or is it their team's not performing well and they've stayed out the back to commiserate with each other?
Right.
You know, there's an unknown there for them to look at. So that was one of our initial things. As a researcher in video analytics, this was really interesting for me because traditionally, CCTV footage is not a great data source. It's not meant to be used in this way. It's meant for security. So it's not high resolution. It's generally, you know, low frame rate. It's not in the best position. It's probably got light reflections. It's not great. But because we had access to this in the Smart Stadium project, we could actually demonstrate that we could get some useful data from an existing legacy system. So the next step for us is really to look at, well, right, we've proven we can do it with some legacy stuff. Let's see what we can do with more interesting tools. So together with Intel and Microsoft, we're looking at putting in a specific camera in that same location, wired up to a more powerful gateway. And then we're doing some pre-processing of the video on that gateway, sending that signal up to Azure to be combined to get better event tracking within that.
So that goes a little bit more to the small model, big model. And I wanted to get back to the specifics of how do you actually do that without being identifiable in the cloud. And so that's why I wanted to come back to the CCTV example. There's videos going into the gateway.
Yep.
Something's happening there. And then it's pushing stuff up to the cloud.
Yep.
Something's happening there, and these two things combine. I'm having a hard time understanding what's on the gateway versus what's in the cloud and how you distinguish between the two.
Okay, so there's two different approaches we're taking. The first one is more like your traditional machine learning, whereas what happens on the gateway is the feature extraction.
Okay.
So feature extraction, you take a couple of frames of the video, you identify a key point, so a point of interest within that image, and you track that key point as it moves across the frames.
Okay.
So the pattern of pixels is something that you can identify, and you can identify that as it moves through a video. So when you start to connect those dots, you get a shape, and that's a track.
Okay.
Right? Nothing about the person, you don't need their face, it's just a sequence of numbers. And if you do that across the whole of the video, you get sets of numbers that are the shapes of people moving, and that can be input then to a traditional machine learning approach that classifies, you know, the frequency of the motion, how fast people are moving on average, how many people are there in a scene, because each dot could be interpreted in different ways. But the actual pixels, the visual bit that you and I could interpret, that stays at Croke Park. So all that's going up to the cloud platform are the features and the numbers that are the raw input to the machine learning processes.
I see. Is there something that, because I imagine, and tell me if I'm wrong here, is that you're going to have an initial data set of the real pictures just to come up with some things, and then you're going to be like, okay, we can put this processing on the gateway versus in the cloud. Is that something you did?
Yes, that's the way we're doing it. So you have to start with that seed,
okay. Because
someone at some point has to see, did we get this right?
Mm-hmm.
So you do need access to do that. But that's where we, as partners in the project, have that unique opportunity to do that kind of checking. But then once you start to scale this out and deploy it, you're not having to take that video out of a controlled circumstance. It's not being saved up somewhere else.
So the gateway, if effectually, in essence, is sort of pre-processing for features.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So as I say, that's one way of doing it. That's kind of quite a classical approach, right? There's nothing really interesting about the machine learning in that. Of course, the new hot topic in computer vision is all around deep learning. So convolutional neural networks, so training models to be able to do that. And so that's where, again, this idea of the small and the larger model potentially comes in. And one of the research questions that my team is working on that we're really interested and excited by is, what can we actually do on a gateway to improve processing potentially in the cloud and to reduce the bandwidth of stuff going up? Now, it's really easy to break that apart in a classical one because you can do features on the gateway and feature processing on the cloud. The way in which you do it for a convolutional neural network model is going to be different, right? So maybe we take apart the convolutional model. We train it as you would normally. You give it a really, really large quantity of video and you build up this network, series of numbers. Maybe we can take that network apart and put some of the network onto the gateway.
That's clever.
And then you send up some of the layer outputs. This is ongoing work. This is the interesting stuff that we want to look at.
But that's interesting, though, because then you'd have to actually look at, because if I understand right, and maybe my knowledge is limited, convolutional neural networks have link backs to other things that may or may not span the network somehow. Yeah. How do you... This is why we study things, kids.
Ask me again in a few years' time. Yeah, this is why it's exciting, because they're not particularly well understood, because there are all these really intricate links. How do we pull it apart? Maybe it'll work really well for one aspect of this, and it might break for something else. We'll find out.
Well, and the other question is that notion of training, because the algorithm I remember was like some weird back propagation, and that's not the way it's done in state-of-the-art things. But they rely on, these networks rely on each other for the numerical stability that they need when you're optimizing that. Yeah. How do you do that across such a big boundary?
Yeah, exactly. And the unique opportunity I think we have with this collaboration is that we can try this out. We can try it on something that is semi-realistic.
And I love the idea of having this Petri dish that's not like a Petri dish. It's like the real world.
Yeah.
Croke Park, obviously, there's 80-something thousand
82,300 people.
So it's not like fake data. You're not. And so it's wonderful. So what are you looking forward to in the future with this project?
It's such a wonderful project for coming up with ideas. And I wish I had three of me and 10 of my team to sort of split up and do stuff on it. I think... the multimodal aspect is something that has really interested me for a long time, and I think we've got a good opportunity here to use that. Now, by that, I mean that we would tend to work on a single type of input. So maybe we've got video, maybe at best we've got multiple videos, but ideally what you want to have is some video and some audio and some ticketing data and some location stuff, and then bringing all of those together, we can set up a model of normality. So one of the challenges in training to detect unusual or abnormal events is that by definition, they don't happen very often. Mm-hmm. So traditionally you would label it and say, here is an emergency, send the security guard because there's a fight. Fortunately, they don't happen very often, particularly in Croke Park. And so you can't do that. So what do you do instead? What we can do is take all of these different modes and train something that recognizes that things are moving the way that the system would expect them to move.
I see.
When things start to differentiate from that, the system is able to raise an alert or perform an action based on, you know, how far it's diverting from what it would expect. So I think that's a really interesting opportunity, and it's difficult to do without a stadium like this, because we need to have these different modes of data, but they need to be real. You can't synthesize all of this stuff very effectively.
Well, this is super interesting stuff. Thanks so much for spending some time
with us.
Thanks,
Matt.
We've been learning all about Croke Park and smart cities from a data perspective. I'm here with David Prendergast, researcher at Intel, to talk a little bit about smart cities.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we do all sorts of work in IoT, and one part of our approach to IoT is we a lot of technical work going on, but we like to test what we develop within what we call living labs. Okay. And a lot of that work has been in the area of smart cities. So for instance, the first living lab we built to test a lot of the IoT, the end-to-end IoT technology we were developing, were based in London. And you know, we tested a range of different living labs and test beds. We worked with Hyde Park, for instance.
Okay.
There we had a range of different technologies, different sensors going through gateways up to the cloud. And we wanted to we worked with the Royal Parks to understand what kind of use cases they wanted. And that would include, you know, how people are moving around the park. It would include things like water quality sensing on the Serpentine. Really addressing problems that perhaps maybe they've got a solution to, but the solution currently is to go down once a month and test something, the water, rather than having an ongoing measurement, automated measurement that you can, for instance, is it safe to swim in the Serpentine would be an example. Is there too much bread being fed to the ducks, creating algae blooms in the Serpentine? Those are the kind of questions that working with the Royal Parks we got to understand. So that was one kind of approach of thinking about those types of, that type of test bed, which was in a limited area, lots of stakeholders, but you're able to, it's a very manageable type of deployment versus, a single use. So in the borough of Enfield, in North London, we just explored air quality, and we developed some air quality, we got some air quality sensors, we built them into an end-to-end IoT system, mm-hmm. put 100 boxes around the borough, and started to get much more granular insights around hyper-local air quality data. And so we've approached things with this living lab approach, and really trying to capture three key things. One is the acquisition of the data and exploring and researching how best to do that and transfer that data, how to analyze that data and where to analyze it, up in the cloud, on the edge. And third, and you know, is extremely important, is the how do you action? What kind of actions are you after with that data? How do you visualize that data? For who? When? How, you know, what point should you deliver that data? So these are all the kind of questions that we have to ask ourselves when we're building end-to-end IoT platforms out. It's important when you're looking at cities, so we spend a lot of work looking, working with cities, trying to understand some of their needs and their challenges. Again, we approach this through through saying, okay, what kind of technologies are out there? But at the same time, what kind of challenges are they facing? You know, so sometimes we may have technologies that we want to say, listen, we can improve your existing infrastructures and practices and processes. And sometimes it's a case of saying, well, actually, there are entirely new ways to think about doing something.
How did Croke Park measure up as a living lab for you?
Fantastic. So. Again, when you think about building out a living labs and a series of test beds within a living lab, you have to think on different scales, you know. And you know, you have your individual labs in your in your universities, in your companies, etc. And you know, you test your devices as much as you can, but it's always in relatively controlled conditions. And so, putting them into live conditions, you know, sometimes harsh conditions, sure. really does test, and you test over different lengths of time. Now, Croke Park is a really great example of when you say you need a more bounded arena. Yeah, so it's a big, complex place, offering all sorts of opportunities of large crowds at different times, but it also, you know, it would have engineers who come in and put things up very quickly. It has electricity, has a good different types of comms infrastructures. Mm-hmm. It has all sorts of different services. So it has retail, you know, it has security issues. You know, there's all those different things. There's traffic management. So in many ways, it is like a microcosm of a city, of certain aspects of a city. So from that perspective, it's extremely exciting, you know.
So how can someone, like, watching, there's got to be some engineers or technical people watching, and let's just say Sue is really excited about putting these things into practice. How does one go about creating a space like a living lab? Yeah. And how do you start asking the right questions to in order to formulate the kind of use cases that you need to do? What advice do you have?
My advice is get good partners. Sit down with them at the beginning, plan out and try and understand their needs and their challenges, and then bear in mind that they may not often have the technical expertise that you have, you know. And so bring in suggestions with them, but really be prepared to go in and listen to their challenges, present solutions, and then work through, think about how that's going to work in their context, and then deploy them and test them over time. But do manage expectations from the beginning. I think this is really critical. You know, don't necessarily kind of think, say, oh, this is going to work perfectly, because usually it doesn't, and you have to, you know, you come across all sorts of issues, and you've got to go back and iterate and improve and do that as rapidly as you can. But just be prepared for that, because this is the, you know, these are real world situations. At the same time, think about, you've got all this great data that's being generated. Some of it, maybe it's not been seen before, you know. Mm-hmm. Do put time into thinking about how it's going to be used, and then going back to your stakeholders, go back to them and ask them, how can I make this as useful as possible? Don't assume things,
right.
You know, don't kind of think, okay, this is one way to design this data. Actually go and say, listen, this is my idea, does it work? If not, what would you suggest? So constant narrative, constant conversation, and that's how I would go about it.
Well, thanks so much, David, for spending some time with us. We're with David Prendergast, a researcher at Intel, talk about sort of the smart cities. And I love the idea of living labs. You should go find one so that you too can create your own special solution. Thanks for watching.
Thank you.
D-C-U. D.
Is that how you guys do it?
Yeah.
DC, is that what you do at night?
No, one ever does that.
Oh.
No, jeez. It's kind of embarrassing.
All right. I am here with Niall Moran.
Did I get it right?
You got it right.
Principal Technical Evangelist with Microsoft to talk about Croke Park. Tell us about this project and how you got involved.
It's an amazing project, actually. It was looking at smart cities and how we could build an IoT solution for smart cities. And so why a stadium? A stadium is really interesting, actually, because you've got a lot of the same challenges in a stadium that you would in a city. So it's kind of like a microcosm of a city. You've got, you know, flood, you've got traffic, you've got crowds, you've got sound pollution, noise pollution, and all of these similar things. So from a Microsoft perspective, we wanted to learn, yeah? What's involved in building out an IoT solution for a smart city? So this Croke Park engagement really allowed us to do that, okay? Allowed us to figure out what are the kind of services, what's the software, what are the hardware requirements, what are the connectivity requirements, what analysis can we do on that data, how do we do that analysis, and then how do we make that actionable, how do we actually do that or do something with that data. So really, from our point of view, right from the start, we wanted to focus in on use cases that had some business value back to Croke Park themselves, okay? So as much as it was a research project, in fact, this was a collaboration between DX and Microsoft Research. As much as this was a research project, we wanted to make sure that the use cases actually had some business value to them, because there's a lot of learnings in that, learnings in terms of how do we implement an IoT solution for a customer, okay? How do we do that, and how do we ensure value, a return on investment, and so on? So we kind of focused in on two use cases that were particularly relevant to Croke Park, specifically around sound monitoring. So the first was fan engagement. So how do we engage better with our fans within the stadium? So a typical All-Ireland final in Croke Park will take about 85,000 people. There's a big community. It's an amateur sport, so there's a huge sense of community within the Gaelic Athletic Association, who control and run Croke Park. So how do we engage with that community better? How do we, just build that kind of, you know, community spirit within the stadium? So one of the things we looked at was sound monitoring. How can we, you know, look at sound at particular points within the stadium and align that with particular events during a match? Okay, so a goal, and really get this kind of crowd cheer thing going. So who's making the loudest noise? What particular event caused the loudest cheer, and create a kind of a gamification of the sound monitoring. Okay, it's a very simple use case, but actually the value to Croke Park was some of the biggest hits on Twitter. You know, so they started tweeting this out. They presented the data on a screen within the stadium and started tweeting some information out, and they got more hits and more impressions on their tweets than they've gotten from any other tweets. So think about that from a community engagement perspective. It was really, really valuable.
So you did the sound one, and what was the other one?
So the other one is actually more of a regulatory compliance issue, which is noise and pollution. How do we, attest to not allowing noise during concerts to go over a certain level? This is really important, so because it's regulated. So what happens is the local county council actually send people out to monitor the sound at these concerts manually within the kind of surrounding estates. And again, this obligation is really with the concert organizers. But Croke Park, again, as part of their, you know, civil duty and their sense of responsibility and their community efforts, wanted to show to the people who lived in the vicinity that they were taking this particular issue seriously.
Sure.
Now, this is actually a much bigger challenge, because it's not just a case of looking at the sound levels. You have to do some pretty complex windowing and, you know, real-time analytics on that data to average it. I don't know if you remember your decibel levels and all the calculations and root mean squares and logarithmic averages. Well, it's not that simple to just do average, it's not linear averages, right? So as this data was coming in, we wanted to do that analysis in real time. We wanted to present that back and maybe even send alerts to tell the people in Croke Park that they needed to turn turn the sound down, right? Very interesting use case.
So a lot of times people talk about these things in the terms that you did, but as an engineer and you as an engineer and developers that are watching, I want to get into how this thing was actually built. Yeah. Let's just assume that we have an endpoint where there's data to be generated. Tell me about the process from where the data is being created all the way over to how you're doing these analysis and these pictures that you mentioned that were shown over Twitter. Why don't we get into that?
It's complex. There are a number of different parts to this, and this is what's really interesting, and I suppose where a lot of our learnings came from in terms of this project. And it's why we needed to work with partners. It's why we needed to work with Intel and we needed to work with DCO on this, because there are a lot of different components here. So first of all, you've got the mics, which were supplied by a company called Sonitus. So these are industrial mics, external mics, positioned within the stadium. These mics then can connect back to gateways supplied by Intel. And they connect back through radio frequency, and then the gateways can connect back to a master gateway, which is essentially on the network within Croke Park. And then that data, so there's a certain amount of aggregation and analysis you can do on the data on the edge, on those gateways, then that data is sent up to the cloud. A lot of interesting stuff happens in the cloud then, because it's not just about storing the data, it's about the analytics.
Sure.
But a key point of all of this is, and some of the learnings, is that we need to design with failure in mind, right? So we need to get the architecture right, because when you've got 85,000 people in a stadium making noise using cell phones, those kind of radio frequencies that you're expecting to get can break down and you can get jam signals. And this is what we discovered in kind of big games. So we've got to make sure that all of the components are decoupled, they're abstracted, that the architecture allows for failure, and then when things come back up, you know, it will just start to suck the data back in again, okay? And this is really where a lot of the Azure components around the IoT suite were really powerful, proved a lot of power, because we could use certain services for certain concerns, so separation of concerns. So we could say IoT hub focused on ingestion, okay, focused on device connectivity, encryption of the data across the wire. Very powerful tool, allowed us to connect to our IoT hub as inputs for the data, allowed us to write simple SQL queries on that data as it came through with the logarithmic averages, and then send that data off for storage or into Power BI as it happens for display.
I see. So let's see if I understand this right. There is a gateway, and that master gateway is sending a bunch of data into IoT Hub. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
I'm trying to understand how much data is going up and what does the data look like, and then how does Azure ingest it?
Yeah. So the gateway will connect to the IoT hub and it's sending up JSON packets of data. So very simple JSON files. There's quite a lot of data in there actually. There's sound data, but there's also weather data because we have a weather station there as well. So we're pulling all of that data in through IoT hub. Right now we're sending data packets every minute and we're looking at should we increase the velocity of that data. Once that data has come in, for the noise pollution use case, we're looking at averaging that data over 15-minute windows, sliding windows, because what we really need to make sure is that the sound levels, the average sound levels, don't go over 75 decibels over any 15-minute period. So we need to have a kind of a sliding view of that data, continuous real-time.
Where is that programmed? Where are you writing the code for that 15-minute sliding window? Because first of all, decibels, if I remember right, is a logarithmic scale.
That's right.
So when you're taking an average, it's not quite the same kind of average that you're looking at. So where is that computation happening?
Yeah, so that's happening actually using Stream Analytics in Azure, right? So Stream Analytics allows us to suck the data in from the IoT hub and allows us to write simple SQL queries on that data in real time.
Okay.
So, you know, if you've got skills in SQL Server, if you've got database skills, you can very quickly kind of write these real-time analytics queries on your data. And we can take those queries, can then do the logarithmic averages, and they can do the sliding windows, and they do it all in a very neat, simple SQL query. That's all documented in the case study. And it will take that data and it will push it into whatever sync or target you want to push it into.
So let me see if I understand this right. IoT Hub is literally the where you just throw all your data. Yeah. Stream Analytics will take that as an input and be able to do these windowed queries. Yeah. And then once you do this, these windowed queries, you have a target of where you actually put that.
That's exactly it. And it's all about separation of concerns. In other words, let's use a service that's specifically built for a particular use case, and nothing else. And then it's, you know, high performant, highly scalable. So IoT Hub is all about connecting to the devices, managing the connections, and ingesting the data. That's it. Doesn't do anything else. If you do nothing with the data, it will just disappear over time. Okay? So Stream Analytics then is all about querying that data in real time. But because that's all it's doing, it's incredibly efficient and incredibly scalable. So IoT Hub can process, you know, millions of these records per second.
And so once you get that data in, Stream Analytics is the one that does the windowing, that does the aggregation. Where are you putting this data once you do the aggregation?
Yeah, so we're putting it in a number of different places for a number of different reasons. We send a lot of the data to blob storage so that we can analyze it later. So it's just kind of cheap storage. We don't know what we're going to do with it. We'll just keep it there. A lot of the data then is sent, a lot of the kind of pertinent data for Croke Park is sent to just a SQL database. Okay. But then the data that we want to use for monitoring and the alerts are sent to Power BI.
Okay.
So we sit Power BI on top of that, we ingest that data in, and we can see through a dashboard, we can see the time series information, we can spot alerts, and we can kind of send notifications or just kind of, you know, change the color of a graph to red and things like that. So very simple data ingestion, analysis, and off the Power BI. The key thing is, though, if Stream Analytics for some reason falls over or stops, we can just start it again and it'll start sucking away on the data and analyzing the data. So it's all separated. It's all a really clean architecture.
So let's see if I understand this right. Directly from Stream, Power BI can connect directly to Stream Analytics, or are you dumping data somewhere that Stream Analytics is going to?
So we can do both, actually. We're doing the latter, so we're pushing data into a SQL database, and Power BI is sitting on top of that. We can even have Power BI look at the blob storage, or we can stream data straight into Power BI, into a Power BI data set. So we can do that in a number of different ways, and Power BI is incredibly powerful for kind of manipulating that data and presenting it in different ways.
For those that don't know what Power BI is, how would you give the elevator pitch for it?
So Power BI is really all about data visualization.
Okay.
But it's incredibly powerful in terms of pulling data in from different data sources, mixing that data up, visualizing that data, doing statistical analysis on that data, and then presenting the dashboards, the kind of, you know, graphical dashboards back to users. And it's self-serve, so people can pull data in themselves and build those models and build those visualizations themselves really quickly.
Whenever we talk about these things as engineers, we're always excited about, hey, this goes here, and everything's beautiful. But there's always, like, there be dragons. You know, where are the dragons in this implementation that you should look out for if you're going to do this yourself?
I think the biggest dragon for us, and we've seen this in other projects as well, is really around connectivity. So, you know, when we think about IoT, you know, the I in IoT, the internet piece, it's kind of one thing if you've got this controlled environment, this controlled network where you're consuming data and analyzing data. But as soon as you start to bring that, you know, from multiple sources centrally into the cloud, you're relying on the internet, you're relying on connectivity from devices that are, you know, in obscure locations. So getting that connectivity right is really important. Mm-hmm. And there's actually some significant challenges in that whole area. And, you know, there are new networking protocols that are being developed to kind of really solve that problem for smart cities. But it's in terms of Croke Park, just getting that data from the sensors into the gateway, where it's now connected to that fixed network, in the stadium where you've got 85,000 people with cell phones and you're relying on radio frequencies, it's not so easy. So we had some challenges there. And also the big games are few and far between, right? So we had a big semi-final and a big final. And when we looked at the concerts, you know, we had the Bruce Springsteen concert, but it was, you know, one concert. So actually getting the window of opportunity to test all of this stuff can be quite challenging.
I feel like we built this thing in the lab and everything's beautiful, and then all of a sudden we put this out and it doesn't work. Don't be discouraged, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Just get in there and try to see what's going on.
Get in there and, you know, you're into let's reboot gateways. Let's, you know, we've got spotters in there on the day to make sure, because we've got compelling events, which is, you know, halftime, full time. But here it's back to the architecture piece, right? If we can not be so reliant on the hardware, if we can make sure that we've got storage at all of the different elements, so the gateway has its own storage, the microphones have its own storage.
I see.
Even if that connectivity falls down,
There's a fallback.
We can just start, you know, sucking that data up. So the code that's written for the gateways, which is just Node.js code, all that does is, you know, continuously poll for that data, and when it finds it, it pushes it up. So if it breaks down, it can start again. And Azure's managed services like the IoT Hub and Stream Analytics, etc., are built in that way as well. So we can stop a Stream Analytics job and we can start it again, and it will just start to suck that data in again.
So what's next for this project?
So one of the other challenges, I suppose, we have with the way we're recording the sound is we're recording the sound very close to the stadium. Okay, so within the stadium, it's sound, okay? But it's not until we go out into the neighboring housing estates where it becomes noise, okay? Because that's the perception from the people in those estates. And again, I talked about earlier on how important community and sense of responsibility is to Croke Park. The challenge we have is because we're recording that sound internally, and remember earlier on, I said that the council send people out to record the sound manually within the estates at concerts, and they've been doing that for a number of years. So what we've done recently is we've said, let's take that manual data that's been recorded, let's compare it to the kind of data that we've been pulling through the microphones in the IoT hub. And let's build a machine learning model to compare that and actually figure out, is there a statistically compelling comparison between these two data sources? Can we say, you know, based on a certain artist, based on certain wind speed, because remember we've got that weather data coming in, can we actually predict how the sound is traveling from the stadium into the neighboring?
I see. And then you can do alerts when you know, because there's a correlation between the sound level inside the stadium and the sound level outside.
Exactly.
That's amazing. And is this something you implemented or something you're working on?
This is something we're working on right now. We've implemented a very basic model in Machine Learning Studio. It literally took us a couple of hours to build a model, just looking at the times. Mm-hmm. We could build all sorts of data into it, but just looking at the time, the kind of statistically relevant pattern that we found was that as the concert goes on, it gets louder and then it drops off. So there's a particular time in a concert where the noise levels get really high.
Right.
So when we did that model, when we trained that model in ML Studio, we were getting over 90% accuracy in terms of figuring out the actual delta versus what we could predict.
Right.
So what we can do then, or what we're starting to do now, is say, well, can we take that machine learning model, can we wrap it up as an API, and can we bring that back into Stream Analytics? So as the data is coming in, we can adjust the figures and say, okay, this is how this sounds to people in the area.
So then the idea is that when the data is coming in hot, you've already had a trained model that can indicate when and when you shouldn't turn down the volume, for example.
Exactly.
So how's the implementation of this going so far?
So it's going great. We have a limited set of data.
Sure.
It's one of those other complex factors in an IoT project, especially when you get into the analytics piece, especially around machine learning, is you need a lot of data. Yeah, and the more data you have, the better. So we've implemented it, but what we really need to do is we need to gather that manual data over more time, retrain the model, and then retrain or recreate these services and inject back into the Stream Analytics.
Well, now this is awesome stuff. Where can people go to find out more about the work you've done?
So what we've done is we've documented a technical case study. And what we've done is we've talked about the business case, the use cases, the architecture. So I've given some diagrams on the architecture. And then probably most importantly, a lot of the learnings that we've had from the project around the connectivity and et cetera.
Awesome. We should do a video sometime later of setting these things up.
Yeah,
because
amazing.
I've always wanted to set up an IoT hub, and I've always wanted to see what Stream Analytics looks like.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that sometime in the future. Thanks so much, Niall, for being with us. Again, we're learning all about how to set up this complex IoT solution in Azure. You've been super helpful. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. I'm here with Diane Zhen here, a postdoctoral researcher at the Insight Center. Is that
right? Yes.
I feel like we need to be quiet because there's like other people like doing actual research right now. Like if you hear the typing, That's real, live computer science research. I'm so excited to be here, my friend.
Apart from me.
Not right now. So you worked on the Croke Park Stadium project. Is that right? Tell me about the project.
The Smart Stadium project. Mm-hmm. Actually, we are create a live project that implement IoT technologies. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of cool research in the lab. And for the Smart Stadium project, we try to apply this research output rather than put them on the shelf. We apply them to the real world and see how does the research that happened in the lab can benefit people in the real world.
So there's a huge difference between what we do as researchers in a lab versus when you actually put it out there.
Yeah.
And you did you work on the device part or the software part?
Both.
Okay.
Both, yeah. So actually, the role of our job is collaborative with everybody. So we collaborate with the GAA, Croke Park, Microsoft, and Intel. So we work from the ground level, the sensor level, to help Croke Park people to install the sensors, select the locations, gathering the data. We work with Intel to develop software on the gateway to get the data from the device. And then we work with Microsoft as well to actually pass the data from the gateway to Azure. So we kind of collaborate with everybody. So we work on everything as well.
So you were actually one of the ones that implemented this stuff, both in the lab and then took it out into the field. Is that right?
Yes.
So you are the guy that I want to talk to, because whenever we talk about IoT, we always talk about the end product and how beautiful it is and how exciting. I want to know where it broke and how you fixed it. Because I feel like IoT is very brittle once it gets into a live environment. My sense, how do you overcome those kinds of things?
Murphy's Law, everything can go wrong, it will go wrong.
Yeah, especially with IoT, right?
So in this project, we have a lot of experience which never thought in the lab. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is we select the location, and then we give the location to the electricians who actually install the box. And then a few days after, when we go there to check out the installation, we couldn't find the gateway. One of the gateway, we couldn't find them. And then we asked them, where's the gateway? And they said, we actually installed the gateway on the other wall rather than the wall that we asked them to install.
And so it's just a question of it being in the wrong place?
That's one of the mm-hmm. problems. And then other things like they installed the gateway in a very awkward location. Mm-hmm. So every time you try to access the gateway, it can't reach them.
Because it's in an awkward location.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, these things are buildings of, like, cement and steel, and if you're using wireless, were you using wireless?
We do use wireless, but occasionally, because it's a research project, so we don't know in advance, and then every time we make some modifications of the code, and then we have to upload the code to the gateways, and we can, if something goes wrong, we need to manually check the gateways, so we do need to access the gateways, as you know, occasionally.
I see.
Yeah, so, this.
So when we're looking at building IoT things, it's a question of, is it in the right place? Can you access them? Those are two that you mentioned. What are some other challenges that you had? Because I imagine that when you put these things out there, they're not going to perform the way you thought.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, are you getting all the data that it's producing, and is the data correct? So what do you say about that?
We do have a lot of experience with the package loss. Mm-hmm. So what we did, we test them in the lab in the controlled environment, and then we were happy with the results. And then we deployed this device at Croke Park, and it worked perfectly. After we installed them, we do the test, everything works perfectly until there's a big game. So the stadium is full of fans, over 80,000 people, and suddenly you get package loss, you won't receive any data. So for this kind of environment, we cannot simulate and we cannot test until we deploy this device in the real environment, and that happens. So, and the reasons could be very complicated, because this is not a controlled environment, and you don't know what's really happening there.
Sure.
So that's another challenge as well.
So you're saying that when people showed up and they turned on their cell phones, for example, all of a sudden the connectivity is going to be weird, you're going to lose a lot of packets. Did you lose everything? Or did you just get diminished throughput? What was happening when you saw?
So one of the problems we have is during halftime, we completely lost. We called the blackout period, with everybody taking off their phone during halftime and start browsing on the internet, watching videos,
cat pictures,
sending
ruined his experiment,
sending Twitters, and then it completely jammed the network communication during the half-life. So we completely lost all the data during that period.
So what do you do with those kinds of scenarios?
Well, this is some interesting findings that from this project that we can feedback to the device manufacturers, the gateway manufacturers. So tell them you need implement robustness into the device itself and the gateway. So if you, rather than sending the data from the device to the gateway, there can be a two-way communication built. So if the gateway never received the data from the sensors, or there's some errors exist, some errors happened on the package, that the gateway can request to the sensor, that ask the sensor to send me the data again. So there's some tolerance you can build into the gateway to make the environment more robust. Also, the gateway can buffer this data. So as long as the network traffic is not too busy, so the gateway can send the data again to the Azure cloud.
I see. So this better protocol is what you're looking at?
Yeah, better protocols and then more robustness, which you can implement on the both the sensors, Azure and the gateway. So for example, if the Azure doesn't receive data, it can send a message back to the gateway and request data again.
I see. Yeah. So are these things that you're actively trying to implement now, or that other partners are implementing?
We do implement this now. So for the next phase, the sensors and the gateways will be more robust. And then for the next season, we can see how this new algorithm performs.
Fantastic. So what are some other challenges that you came up with when you were working on this project? Because I feel like you know where all the bodies are buried. I want to know what those are, because obviously this is a tremendous project that people need to implement it. We want to know what are the problems so that we can avoid
them. So one of the problems is find what actually people need.
Ah, I see.
So we do a lot of research, sitting in the lab doing a lot of research. But when actually we talk to people who actually are going to use these informations, like what do they really need? Probably we didn't thought about it at the very beginning. So one of the challenges is we show them the capabilities of what we can do in the research, and then get their feedback, and then adjust our research, and then show them again and get them feedback again. So we work both ways to make the final project much better.
And so you're saying that initially when you went over there, people weren't quite sure what they wanted, and eventually this became refined quickly.
Yeah, so it works both ways. So for us, we try to understand what they really need. Mm-hmm. And then for them, it's find out what's really available from the research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were there any papers you wrote about this?
We have the white paper, and we plan to publish a few more papers about our findings about IoT.
Fantastic. So what were some key learnings for you personally when you did this project?
I don't know this question.
So what were some of the learnings that you had? What were some of the things that, let me do it this way. What were some things that surprised you when you implemented this project that you had not thought of before?
I don't have.
Like, is there something when you put this out there and you were like, oh, wow, I would have never thought of this. What were some learnings that you had that were surprising that you didn't think you would come up with?
Like when you try to deploy IoT project in the real world, you don't know how many parties are going to involve. For example, a lot of restrictions, paperwork, safety things, and then a lot of things could happen which you never thought. That's one thing you learn from this project. For example, one thing is when we try to testing the gateways, we try to get the electricians from car park, we try to get the IT team people from the GAA, and then the engineer from Intel. It's just hard to get everybody work together at the same time. And then finally, when we book a time for everybody's time slot, and there's a storm outside, you cannot do anything.
So it's just you found out that the hardest part of technology is people. It's true. Yeah. It turns out that all of our stuff would work every time if humans didn't use it.
That's supposed to be funny.
So anything else that you want to add to finish up?
IoT project is interesting, it's challenging, and then when you actually deploy them, there's a lot of surprising. So you never get the day it's very boring. So you always find something new when you do IoT stuff.
Well, awesome. Thanks so much, Diane, for spending time with us.
Thanks very much.
We've been learning all about IoT and some of the dragons that you need to watch out for. He knows where the dead bodies are, so make sure that you ask him. I love the stuff we learned about, particularly about the connectivity, which is super interesting.
Yeah.
And then just the notion of just engineering these things so that they're in the right place. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Okay, I'm here with Camille Ballas to talk a little bit more about the Croke Park project. You've worked on this a little bit, the stadium project. Tell us about that.
So I've joined the project in November, so it's been a few months I'm on it. And so I've been mainly working with Azure, so how from the data we have collected in Croke Park, how we can do some, extract some insight from them on Azure. So all using the right tools in Azure, so I've been learning a lot.
So tell me a little bit about, because it looks like you're getting a bunch of data from some gateways, some master gateways. Tell me about when you get that data, what happens from there and what are some things you've learned?
So I've been working with some CCTV footage that's about the pitch. So we call it the pitch camera. Mm-hmm. And so because it's images, what you don't really think of is that the data will have different size. So you can't use an IoT architecture for images because images are more than 200 kilobytes. So mm-hmm. you need to store them in a blob storage. And so all the data are coming there. But then what do you do? So I've been working first to try to create a small API to retrieve those frames from the blob storage. And so to do so, I've been using some databases, tools, and all the stuff. So I've been working with just retrieve those frames, and then I realized that the way I did it wasn't the good way. And so, because what's great with Azure is that you have so many tools, but you don't really know which one you have to use.
So you said the pitch, which to me means the grass.
Yeah.
You're working with pictures of the grass.
Yeah.
Why, what's the use case?
So one of the use cases, because it's iron, you don't have lots of sun, so they are using some artificial lights to make the grass grow, but it's really demanding in energy, and so it costs lots of money, and Croke Park wants to be a zero ecological mm-hmm. Stadium, so the first zero waste.
Carbon neutral.
Yeah, exactly. So what they want to do is to know where the sun is and where the lights are, so they can just shut down the lights when the sun is pitch. So
and so that's why you're taking pictures of the pitch all the time. How often are you taking pictures?
So it's like one frames per second. So
every second you're getting a picture of the entire pitch?
Yeah.
And I imagine, I mean, because my understanding is this thing's 120 meters by 80 meters.
Yeah.
Which is really big. Is it one huge picture? Is it a series of pictures?
No, it's just one picture. It's like from the security kind of.
Oh, I see.
So you really have an insight of all the stadium. But so what's challenging with doing some analysis on that is that so the picture is not like, it's not straight. It's not like a drones where you would have a picture mm-hmm. of all the grass. You have some perspectives on it. So you have to take that into account when you do the machine learning behind.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the picture itself, because you're telling me you can't send it up, or you can and it takes a long time. What's the architecture look like? What are you doing with this picture?
So the picture arrives on the gateway, and then the gateway transfers the picture to a blob storage in Azure. And from that blob storage, we used a stream analytics that will transfer the images to a NoSQL database, so it's the DocumentDB. Mm-hmm. And then from that DocumentDB, we can query through a web API the frames we want. So we query the frames by timestamp.
I see. And so once you have that, so you have a huge document database of every second of the pitch. Now you have to move on to what is the question, what do we want to do with this? And so what question are you trying to answer?
So what we realize is that taking one picture of the pitch every second is not really worth, because from one second to another second, it won't change a lot, and it's cost money to store the images on Azure. And so what we are currently working on is, can we do some pre-processing of the data on the gateway, so before reaching the cloud?
I see.
And so we have gateways now that are quite powerful, but up to which stage they can they go to pre-process data? So it's all I'm working on right now, how powerful are they? So
how are you tackling this problem of sort of scrunching down this data at the gateway?
So on the gateway, there are three stages with the data. So first you need to ingest the data, then pre-process the data, then transfer them to Azure. But the ingestion and the transfer to Azure won't change a lot. Like if you are using a camera, that will be the same way. A microphone, it will be another way, but still it's quite similar. So I'm trying to kind of tackle a microservices approach where you have ingestion and transfer, which are kind of robust modules, and you can patch your own pre-processing. So it's really challenging because the gateway is just a small compact computer. Mm-hmm. So you work on a small environment. So is it really worth it to kind of dispatch everything? And you want to treat in real time. So you have to think, if multi-threading is it the good way? Mm-hmm. How to ensure that the robustness, because everything can happen and you can't really think of. I'm sure when we will deploy it, something will happen we wouldn't think of, and it will break everything. And
so you're saying that there's an ingest, a process, and then a send out to Azure, and you're trying to change the way the pre-processing happens on the gateway.
Yeah.
So the code that you're writing will be on the gateway.
Yeah.
So how do you tackle this problem of taking a bunch of pictures and then pre-processing them into something that's manageable that you will send up? Are you looking at the pictures? Are you just going to send numbers? Are you going to crunch them down?
It depends what you want to extract. If you want to extract, for example, just to know from which picture it will be different, just to store interesting picture, you can keep in the gateway because you have some small storage. You can keep your picture, okay, that's my reference picture, and then kind of apply some algorithm to compare new incoming images and then say, okay, this one is better, I send the previous one to Azure and I keep this one to compare the following ones. And the ones that aren't really useful, you just drop them, you don't need them. So.
And so that way you're getting exactly the right pictures that you want when things change.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
That's awesome. What other strategies are you looking at to make this a little bit easier to push stuff up to Blob Storage?
So I think the part where you send the data from the gateway to Azure is not the hardest one. Because if you use the .NET Core or even I'm doing it right now in Python, and it's quite straightforward and it works really well. So I think the most challenging part is to think of something that can be modulable. So you can say to other people, yeah, you can use it. It will work. Just patch your own code and it will work. So I think that's the challenge, is they're making something that will work on other gateway, more powerful gateways, because I believe that in the future, gateways will be able to have more power, computing power inside. So maybe we will tackle more interesting problem at the gateway stage. So I think the issue is there, how to make it robust and really allows you to make some updates easily. Because if you have to go to the gateway each time to change your code, it's really bad.
Yeah.
And I know that the .NET Core for the SDK for IoT allows you to change your code remotely, so you don't have to go to the gateway and upload your code. So
interesting. So you're saying that a gateway can update itself?
Yeah.
And how does that happen?
I have no idea.
Yeah, but it's something that you know that can happen. That's awesome. So what are you looking for? What are you looking to do in the future with these kinds of things?
So create the modules and maybe try to use Docker containers with that, so it can be really, you can deploy it really easily everywhere.
And are these containers are living on the gateway themselves?
Yeah.
I see. So everything we've been talking about so far has been how to leverage computing power on the gateway to then send stuff that's a little bit more processed up to Azure.
Yeah.
Awesome. So what other key learnings have you had?
So lots about cloud computing. I never did any cloud computing before, and I think it's been really interesting to work with Azure because there are so many tools and so many opportunities. So I really hope in the future I will be able to test more machine learnings on the Azure side. So it will be really nice.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. We've been learning all about how to use the cloud, and it looks like these fancy little computers that we've been talking about. Here with Camille. Thanks so much for watching.
Thank you.
I'm here with Tomas Meehan, the CIO of the Gaelic Athletic Association. Tell us about what's been going on in the stadium with IoT. First of all, it was a test bed. Tell me about that.
Sure. So we've been working with DCU, the local university, Intel and Microsoft to develop Croke Park Stadium, football stadium, as an IoT test bed. Croke Park is, we consider it to be a microcosm of a city. Mm-hmm. We've got all of the various sectors that you would expect to find in a city in terms of commercial, health and safety, food and beverage, retail. And we felt that it was a good microcosm for a smart city and a good testbed for IoT technology. So we've been working for about the last 2 years to bring IoT from proof of concept to reality. And we have some technologies in place here that have been developed through our collaboration with Intel, DCU and Microsoft. We use those every day and they're making an impact to the stadium.
Let's talk about the beginning of the idea that you had. And because I imagine that because it's a test bed, you were going to have some issues. Let's talk about the ideas you had, the specific use cases, and then the challenges that you saw as you were implementing it.
Sure. So I guess when we started the project, we did quite a bit of work on the use cases to identify use cases that worked for me as the end user or the consumer in this stadium, but also that had a life outside of a football stadium. They needed to be viable in a smart city environment. So we weren't just focused on sports, we were focused on challenges that happened to be present in a sports stadium, but would also be present in cities. We focused on things like crowd movement, for example. So we developed the use cases, identified the components that were needed to bring those use cases to life, and tried to implement as many as we could.
What were some of the challenges that you saw when you were implementing these things?
Connectivity is a challenge. Power and energy for the sensors. Placing the sensors in a place where they could capture data, mm-hmm. but wouldn't be interfered with, wouldn't be in the way. Those were challenges we had in the stadium, but which would also be present in a city.
Let's talk about the connectivity issue. What do you mean by that? Were you talking about, were these things working over Wi-Fi? Are they wired? Tell me about that.
A combination. So the primary connectivity between the sensors and the gateways is using a technology called Zigbee. Intel use that within their gateways or have used that within their gateways. We found, I guess, during high capacity games that people interfered with the connectivity and we had quite a bit of packet loss. It was an unexpected benefit, I guess, really, of the project that Intel and DCU were able to research that and have real data that they could correlate packet loss with the volume of people in a particular area.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about what you're thinking about in the future. Or let's start first with these things that as they're being rolled out and then as they're being used, what benefit have you seen from the introduction of IoT into this stadium?
We've one very practical use case that we took from proof of concept right through to a commercial delivery. In a stadium environment, crowd noise is great when it's inside the stadium, but as soon as it spills out to the environment or the environs, it's noise pollution.
Yeah.
So we need to be very careful of that, not just for matches, but for concerts and meetings, events, Christmas parties, whatever might be ongoing. So we historically would have paid third parties to come and monitor the noise level outside the ground for compliance purposes. We've deployed IoT technology to do that. We have microphone sensors, if you want, speaking to gateways, pushing data into the Microsoft cloud, into the Azure cloud, and we have dashboards which tell our security staff what the noise level is and if they need to go and turn down the volume.
So tell me about the first time you recognized that this is going to be a success. That because there's a realization as a CIO mm-hmm. when you're watching technology be deployed where you're thinking, will this work? Won't this work? But then there's a moment in time when you're thinking, this is going to work. Tell me when that happened for you.
I guess this time last year we were running our proof of concept, running our pilot within the stadium. We decided we were going to use it also for fan engagement. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to have who made the loudest noise, whose fans are
the 15th man, right?
The 16th man.
16th,
yes, exactly.
Lost count there.
So I guess from my perspective, we pushed that out on Twitter. So we had our KPIs, our dashboard. We pushed it out on Twitter, and Peggy Johnson actually retweeted it, and we got something like 350,000 views of our image. And I think as a project, that was a real watershed and a real sense of achievement that we delivered something tangible that was interesting to people.
Yeah, and not just to technology people, but to everyone at large.
Everyone at large, exactly, yeah. So they, you know, it was picked up in some national newspapers the next day in Ireland, and it was a bit of commentary about why Kilkenny people were noisier than Tipperary people or whatever. But
right.
That to me was, from my perspective, was a real high point.
So as that high point came, I'm sure you had, as a CIO, tons of ideas of how you can take this and move it into the future. What are your plans for this type of technology in the future in the stadium?
So I mentioned the Azure dashboard that we have, Microsoft working to deliver that for us, but I really want to see a scenario where we have an interactive dashboard with lots of KPIs and lots of data coming from various sensors. We have other things ongoing, such as wind speed, for example, which is important for one of our tourist attractions mm-hmm. called the Skyline. It's a tourist attraction on top of the roof, so that's 44 meters above ground level. There's a health and safety aspect. If it's too windy, you can't go up there. So we have sensors that record wind speed. I want to bring those onto a dashboard that literally says green to go and red, you can't use it today.
So there's tons of things that you can do that you're excited to do.
Absolutely.
So what word of advice do you have to other CIOs and people that are considering using these kind of technologies? Mm-hmm. What are some roadblocks? What are some things that can help them make this successful?
I think it's really important to get the correct use case. Some things sound really challenging and you know really fun to do, but there may be quick wins that can be delivered in advance of trying something really complex and failing with that. Expect to fail. I think expect to iterate. There mm-hmm. will always be challenges. We've had challenges with everything we've delivered. We found problems and we've overcome them. And I think that's probably the key to IoT. Fail quickly if you're going to fail, iterate and come up with new solutions.
Awesome. Well, Tomas, thanks so much for letting us come here. We're here at the Gaelic Athletic Association's Croke Park. Beautiful stadium. Thanks so much for spending time with us.
You're welcome. Very welcome.
We'll see you.
Thank you.